Ralph Nevins.
What an introduction.
That's it, no bio.
No, I'll do the background bio. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to take you way back, 1975. Okay, 1975, I saw an issue of Popular Electronics that had the Cyclops on the front cover. And okay, I was in high school, and this is cool stuff. The Cyclops had 32 by 32 pixels. It was amazing. You could only see it in an oscilloscope. You know, it had no other value besides being vaguely interesting, but it was still kind of cool. And that, okay, then let's fast forward a bit to roughly 1990. That was in university. I got myself a Zapshot. A Zapshot was an amazing camera at the time. It was actually breaking technology. It absolutely sucked. But it had roughly a megapixel, less than that. But it stored its data on little disks, 1-inch disks made by Canon. And it stored it in video format. It's just, painful to take them off. So anyway, that died a good death. Fast forward again, 1987, I got my first real digital camera. It actually started on compact flash. Okay, this is really good, but I found out something that I was a really crappy photographer. I was just not too interested in darkroom. I did some darkroom classes with Algonquin after a while, but so a couple years later, I'm finishing my master's and twiddling my thumbs, got all these parts and stuff kicking around, and I saw this website from a fellow down at RIT, Rochester Institute of Technology, Andrew David Hazy. I'm gonna mess up his name. I always mess up his name. But he did this slit scan stuff. And you look at the back of the history of this, goes back, I mean, there's an issue of Life magazine in the 1960, for the 1960 Olympics, where they did the spread of these sports people, all done on film. So slit scan is the old-fashioned way. You take a really small slit, and you drag the film behind it. So you get all this strange pictures, and that would change the exposure and be able to stretch time, because you're at one axis, and then time is what you're pulling across. So seeing that, I decided to build one. So I did. He built his out of a scanner, so I went out and bought myself a cheap scanner. And this is without the motor that drives the platen, whichever. This is it. So this, instead of on film, you have the slit. This is 3 pixels because it's color, and you only ever use one. And you let things, you put it behind a crappy old camera, the original duct tape, the hole cut in the back, so you're somewhat close to the film plane, and you move the camera. Or, if the camera's stationary, you let the scene happen in front of it. And then, in this case, you pull the data off all the actual real electronics onto USB, onto a laptop. Okay. The original images I did with this was great. It had a lot of fun. This was about 3 months worth. Had to write a lot of software to get this to work with a laptop. Then my second daughter was born, and this went on the shelf. Okay, time went on. Took a whole bunch of photography classes, learned something about photography. Thought I was doing well, got some shows, thought I was doing better. Did a lot of other weird things, including, this is a digression. Now, Jim there is familiar with this. Some of these. So I had this large table, and I spun people with a standard camera. I spin them for 20 seconds. 20? Something like that. Don't remember. And you get these interesting shapes with the light coming down over top of them. Great project, not terribly well acclaimed, Didn't show very far, but very interesting. And up, this is one of the things I did at the Stafford Studios. Have this big table in the dark, spinning people in the dark. So you finish the project, you get all these pictures done, and then what do you do with a 4 foot wide rotating table? Okay. Didn't know.
Sell it to NASA?
Yeah, I put it on the kitchen table and eat Chinese food. No. So it occurred to me I could go back to this. This is 8 years after I originally wrote the software for it. And okay, do like what most of the people who have ever done slit scan is do something like this, and you rotate, I'm dropping pieces. You rotate people and you get 360 degrees of people as they rotate. It makes interesting skewed images. It's interesting. Been done. Think harder. Put it on top. Rotate people underneath. And that produces other interesting images. I'm probably going to have to pass this around. This is way too small for the size of the crowd. Anyway, let's pass it around. So the woman is rotating. This is one exposure, approximately 3 minutes long. And the pivot, the very center, is at the pivot of the rotating table. And you can look on the edges as the rotating table is going by. It's got a divot, and you can see the divot on either side going bouncing back and forth. But it did something rather unique. What was peculiar is, you know, I start looking at these and, okay, what else can you do with it? And that's when, these ones. Again, way too small, way too dark. These started off at the same type of image, which is actually an extension of what we were talking about. The previous image is like this. This is just done with people. So you're actually doing this panorama thing, which is what the long pictures are, taking a section of it, a subsection, and wrapping them around mathematically to get kind of a mini planet with people. Okay, as far as I know, nobody else has done this. So this is pretty cool. Kind of makes people happy.
Well, that shot is all at the same instant in time?
No. See, but neither are those. To say that these 3 minute exposures.
And that's a panorama.
This is a 15 picture image. So, to think about it a different way, that long picture of the woman, the orange, I guess, picture, that's 15,000 lines across by 1,200 deep. So it certainly has a lot of pixels to it. So you can actually blow them up relatively large, not too much because of the 1,200. But so that worked well, and that was actually the beginning of the first studio session, in which case, where I did a lot of those. Which includes the one on the card there. And these were actually done using a City of Ottawa arts grant. So I was able to get a small studio for about 5 months and get people to do strange things. It actually paid for some nudes as well, which didn't work out as well. Nudes are actually kind of boring. It's having patterns and other things that actually combine are much more interesting. one of the fascinating things about using
tattoos
kind of blended. So what ends up happening is you're using a raw sensor. These things are extremely sensitive to infrared. And so a lot of things disappear. See, for example, the woman lying there, okay, actually, let's take this one. This gray sheet behind, that's black. It totally reflected everything. Yet the paint on the rotating table absorbed everything. The same thing as her dress had black lines. It didn't show up. She was wearing a black and white tie, I believe, and it absolutely disappeared. Actually, I was shooting a woman last week, and she had black leggings and a really dark blue jacket. Everything turned white. It was just really interesting infrared effects.
Can you predict any of the outcomes?
Absolutely not.
control for it? Absolutely not.
Oh yes, you can control for it. You can put. I've got a hot mirror. The trouble is, so much energy in infrared, it helps it so much, makes the exposure so much easier. To do these pictures, I had three Home Depot hot lamps. You know, but not hot lamps. Work lamps.
Yeah.
The 500 watt ones, beaming down on the person, and it was warm enough. Wasn't it, Rick? Yeah, never mind. Go back to sleep.
So I'm trying to picture this. So you're shooting from above.
The camera is positioned directly above.
You've got a person on a rotating table, and then you've got a scanner.
Nope. Camera is fixed. You think of a line here,
And
it's rotating. So arm, leg, as they go around. So it keeps getting repeating. So this is one exposure.
How fast is the rotating?
This is a minute and a half. Most of the ones I shot in the studio were 3 minutes.
How about the rotation?
Six minutes. This is 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, one. Less.
Okay.
Any place in between?
Really slow.
Yeah, okay. And interesting project. You've got this large rotating table. You turn on the lights. You turn on the camera. You jump down onto the floor onto your stomach, and you push the table along with your fingers. I was bruised some days. It was.
You can count rotation.
Yes.
So
every time?
Yeah.
One, two, three, four. No.
Two.
One, two, three, four. Yeah. But I found that to get really good pictures to do these, I did them twice as long. What it came out to was roughly 10,000 lines long. Is that right? I'm trying to remember. I've changed projects. Yeah, doesn't matter. Yeah, wave my hands. But a lot of the pictures. I thought I brought more of them. This one was. This is one of the first three or so I did. This one actually was been in a show in Boston as well as a Russian poetry journal. The show in Boston was, my wife is a mathematician, it was a mathematical art, and they picked it up for mathematical poetry art. Sure, doesn't matter, but very bizarre.
Can you see it?
Sure.
What?
Yeah, that'd be, I think I took out most of them. Moving away from those, so that project finished, and I had to. But in the meantime, I got another artist studio grant at Stafford Road. And okay, you got to change project. I'm tired of jumping down on the floor with this massive table, so. I wanted to change the device. This thing was okay. But at 1,200 pixels, it was kind of limiting. So I built one, kind of. So the back end of this is an industrial assembly line scanner. So the assembly line goes by and it scans as things go by for doing inspection. And it is 8,000 pixels. And this is my own focusing mechanism. And you can see the line inside. Now, really, really wide. It required a large format lens, which I hacked up and got to work. This turned out to be interesting. It required a desktop computer. This is all almost 15-year-old technology. It required 100 pair wire cable coming from this to the computer, and the software was really disgusting. But being so old, it only gave me 8 bits of data per pixel. And that turned out to be very limiting. But I still got some images. We got 2, which are also going to comprise the show month and a half from now. These are actually some of the poor copies. I've got better copies of. It's kind of don't hand out the copies I'm going to be showing, right? Kind of. But because of that limitation, you know, there had to be a better way. And what ended up happening, and I can skip back again. I got this second studio grant, and I had to fight with Penelope to switch me, because she wanted to give me a time when I was going to be gone, because it turned out I was going to go to France for 10 months last year, and I couldn't be in the studio and be in France, so she was able to get me to swap with somebody. So that's why I ended up with the studio so soon and didn't have enough time to spend working on the software, getting it, improving it a bit. On the other hand, once I was in France, I joined a photography club. I don't speak French. I was this kind of weird Canadian guy, but I showed pictures anyway, and they all liked my pictures, but it came down to it, how do we know you're doing this stuff? You know, you could be pulling this off the web. You know, this is just, you know, just prove it. So, a challenge. So I spent last winter coming up with the third one, which solved the problems of those two. It's portable. Neither one of those had to have laptops, had to have massive power supplies. It has much more resolution, and it's about 3-4x faster than the fastest. So I'm now getting 12-bit data. I can control it so much better. You know, real focus, really on the focus plane. And I've been shooting with this for the last, hundreds of hours last fall shooting with this. And some of those pictures, I'll backtrack just a little bit. Actually, we can pass this one around. This is done with the bigger camera, where they're not actually rotating, having the person move as a pattern.
So this is fixed camera?
That is fixed. Okay, the camera's actually going up, so they're being scanned as they rotate.
It's going
up. Or down, doesn't matter, pick one. Like.
You're physically moving the camera?
Yes, it's actually, I attached it to a rotary table used in machining to get it down so it was smooth enough. I mean, that was one of my biggest hassles in trying to get it to move up, is it actually moved jerking. And that was, mechanics. You know, I deal in electronics and photography. I'm not a mechanic. I mean, this is hard. But it eventually did work well enough, and I was able to shove through, I think, probably about 20 people in the last 6 weeks I had the studio. That's just, that was a little bit strange on that sense. But where was I? I was going to bounce forward. Pictures. there. Okay, so playing around, but that's just in the studio. To actually get further and have it portable, so this is an Ottawa picture. I've got a whole pile of French pictures there too. This is a professor at Carleton, and this is actually using the portable camera, but it's now on a little table I built that swings back and forth, a little bit like a windshield wiper. So you can see the point where the camera bounced back, and he's climbing stairs. And it's easier if I pass it around because it's way too dark in here. What does end up happening, though, is you end up with long pictures, especially if the camera is fixed. So let's do the French one first. And this is about a fifth of the picture. The one that's showing down at the Thames Gallery right now is 16 feet long by 8 inches, so it's a little bit twice the height. And this is...
So, Ralph, why don't you explain to us how you do that? That's with the portable camera?
This is with the portable... This is the long one going around.
Yeah,
the camera was fixed and had people walking across a bridge. During a festivity down in Montpellier. And it was just this constant stream of people. And I just stood there for an hour shooting. And I've got half a dozen of these really long pictures with different people flowing by. And it's just continuous.
And if there were no people, what would the picture have looked like?
If you get no people and the camera is fixed, you do not see a background. You see just streaks. So it's just one pixel. So you imagine Flatland. I mean, some of you read Flatland? Similar to that. You cannot see anything. Just one line. But in this particular case, she was moving. Or the car was moving.
Within the camera, there must be some kind of sequencing capturing that line.
I'm really lazy, and it takes one line, takes another line, takes another line, takes another line, and it just stacks them. And I never got that fancy. The speed right now is 130 times a second, so roughly 14 milliseconds between. Is that right? No, faster than that, 7 milliseconds. And I'd like to go faster. I mean, there's three or four things that I can do with this. Actually, pass this one around to have a quick glance. One of the benefits of this one, I'll rewind here again, is that not only is it portable, the color depth is 12 bits, or it's still grayscale, still really highly infrared, but it is so much, much faster. And what was that? Oh, yes. It saves everything to an SD card. So, and you end up with these massive files, 60 megabyte files. And then you correct for the speed of the subject or the focal length of the lens, because it seems like different focal lengths will give you different aspect ratios, and you sometimes have to stretch the picture a bit. So typically with a 50 millimeter, I have to double it. So instead of getting 60,000 lines in that 3 minutes, I get 120,000 lines. So it's tends to be kind of cool. This one, I'll send this one just this way. That one's actually taken in Ottawa during the summer, during July. Very similar, just sat down on Rideau and watched the bums beg for money and watched the people walk by. And it just kind of sat there for a couple hours. But again, it's only a really small percentage of how long these pictures actually are. And to make some of them more interesting, and you can see inside of the... Let me just grab one.
Yeah. Let's grab the whole thing.
Oh, no, no, it's fine. It'll come around. It'll... I blanked. What was I saying? Anyway, instead of having it just sitting there statically, I bought a little Chinese... I'm sitting there in France. I've got no tools, no materials. So I'm doing all this essentially sitting at a table with a screwdriver, and I had to go buy a soldering iron.
You were drinking?
Soldering iron? What?
Screwdriver.
No, she had screwdriver. No. I ended up buying a little Chinese display table made out of plastic for 20 euros or something like that. And so I was able to make the camera go around in a circle and getting back to these other type of images where it turns into panoramas. And you'd end up in 3 minutes, it would go around three times, 3.5 minutes. And then chopping the appropriate piece, you can then mathematically transform them into the circle images again. So these are the really big benefit of doing the images like these using this device, using a circular table, is that you don't have parallax problems. Because taking the five images for the large color ones, you always have to align them and fight with them. With these, they're already pre-aligned. That line there, that is always going to be there next time you come around, unless something gets in the way. And people get in the way, birds get in the way, and God knows what else, trucks. But
get in the way of what, the lens?
Well, yeah, like in the static pictures, people, if people are walking through them, they create a smear, and they won't be there the next time. So if you take a slice completely the next time, you don't have to worry about it. Or pick a slice where there's no movement. So you do get things showing up. And I believe in the little portfolio thingy there, there are some where there's people moving through it. That for the most part, in the portfolio book, I've taken these and chopped sections out. Okay, you know, it's blank on either side. That's the interesting bit. I don't have to worry about it. So it makes a more interesting picture. Some of those will be at Atrium as well. Now, where am I? There's two places I'm going now with this. One of them kind of is the my real holy grail, the thing that I plan on chasing after the most, and that's color. Color would be really, really cool. Color has really, really big problems. Like, not only do you have, not only is it color, and you have alignment problems, because even in those small sensors, those three lines are separated by a certain distance. So if you try just to stack them, they're going to be shifted by a little bit. So you have to align all the frames, you know, maybe just 1-2 pixels. But it's going to be an irritant, and things are going to have funny glows on either side, right, red and blue. On the other hand, the three color sensors from that they've made are all much, much more sensitive in infrared, which does make much more interesting pictures. I mean, the whole spectrum is shifted because of the red filter in front of them. So that gives me two cameras for one. So that's okay. But saving the data, I'm pushing this camera as much as I can. This is saving nearly a megabyte a second. And okay, for small micro, it's engineering. It's not great. I mean, it should be able to go faster, but for the small micros, you can't. For color to try to push that much data, I need to use bigger, more power, different problems. The other thing that I will show, which I just got working last week, is one that doesn't save data. And this is going to be part of the show as well. And Penelope said I could stick it in one of the display cases. It's awfully dark in here. But we should be able to get something. Most of the camera shots... where are we? So, as something to draw people into the gallery, I'm moving this. You should be moving. I mean, it's one line, right? It's not going to see you. As a matter of fact, it's probably... There I am, I think. So, yeah. Or... wherever focus is. Looks like you're almost better down here. So that's one line at a time being pushed directly to the display. In a brighterly lit place, that'd be a little bit more impressive. But here, let's point it towards the brightly lit people. Move. And can't see it anyway. Here.
Ralph, it looks like my ECG from a couple of weeks ago. My heart is still beating, so I'm pretty happy.
Well, in a bright little... Anyway, it's really pretty when it does work, and I expect it to at least get the kiddies to show up. Yeah, there you go. Just move a bit slower. Now, I had to slow this down a lot. It actually has a whole pile of other operations in there, and just because to make it go fast, it was whipping across the screen too fast. So it's kind of...
Is there a rate that the subject has to move?
Nope. It's taking the data as fast as it can, so one line at a time, over and over again. So this was temporary project. I plan on submitting this one for a show down in Toronto for the... I've been in twice before the Fashion Art Toronto, and build a kiosk out of this because I've got another device that doesn't just show it on a little screen. It'll show it on a regular monitor or a TV. Which would be, you know, big, something that a little bit more impressive. But this is good enough to put it inside of a glass case over at Atrium. And the next place really to go is color. And just kind of, they've got all the parts sitting on the bench. These sensors, by the way, these sensors, this one and the ones that are in here, are all made for barcode scanners. So just black and one line, black and white, as opposed to a or what you'd call a regular scanner, desktop scanner, or a color copier. And the trouble is, the other irritating thing is that all this technology is old. It's getting harder and harder to find the sensors. They've all moved to the lower power contact sensors that are much, much faster. But the sensors are this big, and I can't use them. It's okay. There's enough of these still kicking around that I have to order them from China. Everything comes from China. But overstock from previous scanner manufacturers.
Why are the big ones no good?
Just because the big ones are 10,000 pixels, and I can't fit that inside of one of these.
A huge lens,
and yes, even the lighting requirements. To be that big, I have to be so far away from the lens, which means the aperture has to go up. I mean, even wide open. I mean, it's just not going to suck in enough light. I picked Nikon because I shoot Nikon. You know, it's kind of, so I got all these lenses kicking around. I mean, it's easy enough to find dead bodies. The bodies are costing me $20 for something newly broken. The last one was a nice EM that somebody had oil all through the shutter, so no one's going to fix it. But that'll be the color one.
Did you use a spinning color wheel?
No. interesting point, but you'd have to synchronize the coloring wheel, and that would be even worse. Part of the problem is that the black and white sensors are really bad at blues. I mean, they're really good at infrared, so that the whole spectral curve is shifted. And it where the blue sensors in the three color are really good at blues. So to be able to add them together should be possible. That's for the next grant.
Do you think you'll be able to essentially compute the color of a pixel using the kind of averaging they use for regular
video filters? Well, the pixels coming out are already filtered. And actually, if you look at the sensors under a microscope, you can see the red, blue, and green. Kind of. And to push it even further, the data comes out on three separate lines, so you know which colors are which.
I know from just using a flatbed scanner, just a moving object produces horrible, brilliant color fringes because it's...
I'm worried about it.
...getting primary colors on each of the different pixels, so you get all these bright primaries.
Yeah, and it's going to be an issue. Trouble is, I'm pulling in... Well, I don't know how I'm going to fix it. I have seen people that have done something, I wouldn't say similar, but yes, that was one of their issues. If the subject is static, like if I do circular objects or landscapes, it shouldn't be a problem. I should be able to just lift a plate and drop it. But for moving objects, people, maybe not. I mean, it's all experimentation. I don't know how bad it is until I actually do it.
I'm sure you know the field much better than I do, but I'm sure I've seen a color flick scan.
Yes.
Was it recolored?
No. Okay, there's an app for that. If you don't mind a low-res one, you can do it with your iPhone. You take it and you shove it through a program.
Okay.
But your frame rate's dead slow, and you're limited to the size of whatever the X and Y of the iPhone can make a movie out of. I have no idea. I've looked at that, and I'm aiming for stills, so it doesn't interest me that much. I look at it as kind of a novelty, but to do anything post-processing, I don't. And there actually there's been kiosks, I mean, something I wouldn't say similar to this, where it's been set up and people walk through and there's a background and you change the background as you're walking through it. A lot of video processing. But I didn't do that. I had a thought there. Went in, left. Don't remember. The other thing about, one of the biggest issues with color is going to just be data size. I mean, just if these pictures are 120 meg to create, the color ones are going to be 360. And that's going to be hard to save. I do.
What creates the lines in the panoramic? The outer edge line.
Dirt. No. Oh, sorry. The outer edges.
Yeah.
Okay. That's actually a Photoshop anomaly addition. When it does the transform, it just stretches those pixels.
I use PG GUI for stitching, and it will do that sometimes. But I'm not sure why.
This isn't the stitching part. This is just doing the transform into the stereographic form, and this is the stereographic.
Fills in data.
Yeah, if there's actually a really good app, Peachtree, I think. Is that the right name? That actually does all different types of transforms. So it's kind of... Stop that. So here's another one. This was taken with a model downtown last week, or 2 weeks ago. Bounce, bounce, bounce. And this is just, it's slowed down to view it, but it's a 3-minute picture stretched out to about 13 minutes. And she's just standing there walking back and forth in front of the still camera. And it turned out kind of neat. So I've been doing a few more of those lately. Again, if printed, it's roughly 16 feet by 8 inches. Yeah, well, I got printing problems. Let me tell you about printing problems. Jim can tell you about my printing problems, since I was consulting with Jim about my printing problems. The cheapest place in town I could find to print was at a commercial printer, and the quality's barely acceptable at $150 to print. To ask the print shop there on Bank Street to print is someplace between $350 and $450, one picture. And I provide the paper.
Have you talked to Raymond Aubin about this?
No, I was talking to Jim.
Yeah. Raymond has done very large, very long prints.
At Ex-Nil.
I have to go back to, I think at Daimon.
Yeah, Daimon Ex-Nil, yeah.
Yeah. And they had to use a different rip because, printer rips don't do it.
Yeah.
And, but he did it, and he created this, a Moiba strip panorama.
Yep.
That was, I think, about 12 feet long or something.
Yeah. More than that.
I could do that. I mean, these things would lend themselves to that. I could find places in these pictures to join them.
You talked to Dave Andrews?
Dave Andrews.
He's independent, but he's... Hello, Henry's Bank Street there.
Yeah, he does really nice work.
Okay, I think that was one of the
people. National Gallery, and
it was suggested. It wasn't a matter of there's people that can do nice work, but it was a cost. Mm-hmm. At some point, I can't afford $200 to make one print, $300.
Well, I haven't paid that much. I've done 2x3 prints, but I'm not anywhere near that much.
Doing the long ones. Have a different problem than doing the big
ones.
Well,
he might be somebody to talk to.
Yeah.
If you go into Henry's and just go downstairs there, he's
okay.
Not part of it.
Okay.
Laurentius Bell had huge print made in Saguenay. And she said, I know them for quite a few artists who do huge work. They send their work there. They're very reasonable, and they do very good work.
And I went to Allegro on Carlin.
Oh, no.
And I call around a lot of people and say, oh, no, the only way we'll print that is to do it on canvas. What? No, not canvas, but vinyl. They only put eyelets on it. And kind of.
Oh.
As it is, so this print that's sitting down at Thames Gallery, it's 16 feet long, and I was going to have, I was, you know, bleeding out of my eyes trying to figure out how to, I'm going to mount it. They eventually accepted it as a roll, and they're going to pin it to the wall. As it was, I was going to have to drive down. There were sections of 1x8 or 8x16s, or 8 inches by 8 foot, and try to somehow glue it down there. There's no way I could ship it, a 16-foot by 1-foot package. I mean, I could, but even that. Well, most of them, I mean, they will charge you. I mean, I'm sure they'll ship it, but 16 feet?
Is there a way to put a break in it?
Yeah, and they offered, you know, suggested I could possibly do that. I could actually, I can actually print these things on a 3x2 and just stack them. It doesn't look the same. It doesn't have the impact of having this line. And I really like it when they're big. Yeah, I've seen people do that too. There's a fellow down in Texas that's done a colored backlit one and just having it waving across. But, nah.
They could have had a frame.
Yeah, frame. Oh, give me a piece of glass. Even plexi. I mean, I kind of. That'd be an interesting experience.
Did you see my mom's show?
Because
it has this print made on what they used to cover the buses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting, and they mounted them on plexiglass. Go have a look if it's.
Yeah. The sticky stuff.
Yeah.
There's a place in town that'll do it. I don't know how much it costs per foot.
Yeah. He went there because of the
Boss imaging, Boss printing, or something like that. We'll do it.
I
bet you.
I'd have to ask him and let you know.
But yeah, they'll print on damn near anything, including the sticky stuff.
Yeah.
It's just when you start talking about people asking them, will they print it like this? They always buy the 2-foot or 4-foot rolls. Oh no, but that's the only thing. You got to pay for the whole width by square foot. No, I'm only using this much. It's kind of.
Sometimes if you want to print on aluminum, very thin sheet aluminum, and it changes the whole visual quality.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen a couple done on aluminum.
Maureen Salgado.
Yes. Yeah, she had a bunch at her show a couple years ago.
Claudio?
Yeah, Claudio. She has a whole series on aluminum, but expensive again.
Yes.
Kind of again. Give me a 16-foot piece of aluminum. I'm sure somewhere you could find.
You can get 12 feet. That's the longest.
That would be an exciting project, but you know, I don't think they pay for it. I mean, I suppose I could. That's another grant.
Ralph, on the, do you actually go to the grand format printer that do the 16-foot rolls, like sort of wrapping buses and everything? You can basically do your image with ones. So it's like a 2-inch thing. That's like 8.
Yeah.
It doesn't even count.
Yeah.
That's right. Do a tail end on a bus and kind of.
Yeah.
But actually, I can picture these being on the side of a bus. That would be kind of cool to just wrap the bus. It's kinda, what was the
I want to look at your second print that you handed around again. I got a move, but I just found
second
it
print?
Yeah, she was in checkered and it sort of came into a it's very spherical and beautiful.
These ones are no.
No. It was dark. It was the second print you had. It might be that one. Yeah, it might be that one. I can't see anything back here. No. Oh, I like that one too. But I don't know. I like this one.
It's yours for a price.
So Ralph, maybe you need to go and find a wallpaper manufacturing plant. Maybe they can
Yeah, but what turns out is that if I've been fighting over this and have decided that I'm probably going to end up buying a used printer, and Epson sells rolls of paper in 4 inches and 8 inches wide by 100 feet, and then I'll just do it myself. Damn it, it's kind of I'll have to get Jim as a resource to tell me how to do the ink thing. But some of them won't die after you empty one cartridge. So I could leave all the color ones blank and just use black. Which, right now, that might change in the future.
The Epson stylus printers will print on holes long, up to a certain maximum width.
Yeah, most of the inexpensive ones, 44 inches.
Sorry?
44 inches. Yeah. You have to get other software to rip it to make it go longer.
Yeah. The limitation's 30,000 pixels on the normal driver for Epson.
Or more.
Some of them are restricted to 44 or whatever.
Yeah.
But what about something like a 4080?
That's the smallest software available.
Yes, for another $600-$700. Yeah. That's kind of here.
Once you have it.
Yeah, once you have it, it's okay. I think that the software is called QImage, and it will do that type of ripping. The industrial stuff that the real printers use for buses and whatnot, that's in the thousands of dollars for one copy of that.
I mean, this kind of my printer is maximum width 13-inch, but I was told, not that I print on gold tape, it's 13 inches by long
until fine print. There's Epson makes two types. One's 44 inches, the other's 96 inches. I don't know why it's not a double nip. Doesn't matter. But then, those printers' limitation. To go beyond that, you have to use third-party software. And there's absolutely no reason why not.
The mathematics. If you're printing, if you're paying $200 for prints, you've done it before prints, and you can.
I know. That's why. That's why I'm moving that way. I can't not do it that way.
All you need is like a 2880. Right?
And people are selling them. Yeah. I've been watching Kijiji. I mean, people are dumping some of these.
That's a current model.
But
yeah, it's still a current model, but your biggest problem is going to be the ink for that. So there was something like a 4880, because the ink cartridges themselves are much larger. You don't need the 17-inch width, but you need
to get enough capacity to cover.
Now, the other option is there's inkjet malls that sell inking systems that can be used in those.
They'll put big cartridges on the small printer and feed them with two.
Yeah, just have that gallon jug of black ink pouring into it.
So you can get bigger reservoirs.
Yes, yes. Exactly.
Run the tubes.
And
they're archival.
And that's what I'm going to have to do. I mean, to make any of these real. Because otherwise it doesn't work. But that's where I am. That's
okay. Huh? You're having a lot of fun. So
you've got
to dance for the next hour now.
Yeah. Now I've got the other long image here as well. The limitation of trying to show them on the computer is that the program will only show a JPEG. And JPEGs have upper limits of size.
So this type of stuff, what's your background?
Looking for work. I've got a bachelor of computer science and a master's in engineering. Been unemployed since March.
Yeah. Used to be down the hall from me while he was gone.
You went
off on a trip.
Yeah, well, and I wouldn't have traded that for anything. That was the trip was totally worth it. I could talk to you about France. But this is certainly more than a hobby. I mean, this is the atrium will be my fourth community gallery. Been trying for the Carche-Maison galleries, but I guess it's just City Hall now.
Yeah.
For about 4 years, might be my turn. You know, Canada Council grant time is coming up, 1st of December, so for visual artists, you have time to put in your paperwork. Anybody else who wants to give me money? But background? Yeah. Now, you couldn't do some of this stuff without some pretty heavy computer science. There's not too much engineering involved, but a lot of reading. But sitting there in France, since I wasn't working there, yeah, and they really liked it. I mean, when I went back to the camera club and showed them last March or so, it was just kind of, it was pretty weird, even though I couldn't understand it.
I can see the French really going for that. But no, it's just the nature of novelty and the technology behind it. But what I find interesting is, I find it more interesting when it's more.
Oh, yeah.
Well, as projection instead of printing.
But there's some things when you see it when they're printed and they're really long, there's some people that reappear here two or three times. And unless you can see the whole thing, you can't actually find them showing up and disappearing again. So that's why I like it printed. At the same time, this program, made by a Frenchman, I've talked with him a couple of times. It's been worth it because there's very few things that it will actually scroll sideways for so long.
So when it reached the end,
it just bounces back and forth. I think there's a way to make it go around, but then you have this big dot discontinuity once you hit the end.
Well, you're hacking device drivers, right?
For this, no. This is all mine. All my software. All mine.
You're not even using
no
open source device drivers.
No, I've
just pulling bits off wires and processing.
Absolutely, and staring at data sheets for hours, and that was hard. there's probably I'd say there's a man month of software in here. Last February. But now that I've done it once, I can replicate it.
Yeah. For this first slip scan, you mentioned...
That's hacking device drives. Yeah, and that's messing around with SANE software, which is open source. And you rip out all the motor control and things that... this thing had a page length, right? The other stupid thing about this sensor is 10,000 pixels deep. And it doesn't move data fast enough to get all 10,000 pixels. So you have to tell it to dumb it down to this 1,200, take every eighth pixel. Which is really annoying because I would have loved to have 3 times 10,000. But it would have been so slow, it wouldn't have been usable. Tried it. Try doing color on here. So slow, it's not usable. And what happens when you're scanning older scanners, this that's shoving the data down in between the lines. You can't tell somebody to stop on the table. Or you can't stop it at the same time. But you adapt. Yeah, that was device drivers. This was different. So the camera is actually made down in Waterloo. I bought it from a place in Korea. The board that connects to this in the computer that it's attached to is made in Montreal. I bought it out of Hong Kong. Originally, it was on the order of $30,000 for the card and this box, and I got it for about $500. So it's kind of, that's how things have changed over a decade. They make these really small, too. I mean, nowadays, you can buy for $50,000, you can get one this big. And it's just kind of amazing. USB, 400 megabits per second, blah, blah, blah. But I don't have that kind of money. And if you want to go out and do it yourself, you can go out and get a finishing line camera, which has exactly the same effect. And they're quite willing to sell you one for $5,000.
What's a finishing line camera?
So when you see the horse races, where the runners?
Yeah.
You see all the backgrounds blurred exactly the same way. And it's just their motion and who's out in front of that line
so
first.
One nose ahead of the other nose?
Yeah. Exactly. And that's all that happens at that moment. But they're not meant to be portable. They're not meant...
What about using... especially movie shot from some kind of modern digital SLR, something where you can actually, roughly to get the effect, you would narrow it down and just pretend there's a slit.
You can do that, yes. Actually, while I was standing there in Montpellier last winter, a guy from Vancouver, started talking to him. And I can do that with my... what's the big fancy digital camera? Red.
Oh, yeah.
The big honking red. Six frames a second.
Well, that's the thing that all of the people who've done video, particularly video and RAW, which Red was the first, is that they've figured out how to actually get the bits off of the card faster.
Your limitation is the limitation with the camera. I mean, you could be able to do color with doing that one line at a time. You'd have a hell of a lot of post-processing. But you could be a little bit more fussy. Your limitation, though, is your speed. You're still stuck at your 24 or 30 frames per second. I'm going 130. And the next version is going to be hopefully twice that, which is going to... it makes a difference. It makes a difference for the fineness of the motion.
But 130 frames
per second. Lines.
Lines. Right. Normally, your subject would travel at a certain speed.
You don't know how fast your subject's traveling.
No, but imagine you're scraping it at a certain speed. Could you not just use the full frame sensor and move the line across the issue? The difficulty getting it back.
Yep, but it's not only moving that line across, because suddenly if you're moving that line, the background is going to move too. So rather than having these lines, you're going to have little chunks of lines. And then, yes, you do have to pound back. I do think that I want to be able to do these pictures outside. This is another project. I haven't quite figured out how to do it yet. But to do this outside, to take any scene and rotate the camera this way, which should do something completely different again. It should, the center is going to be very static and everything else is going to be shifting, and I should be able to do something even stranger once I rotate it into these patterns. But I don't know what it looks like yet. Haven't done it. Real soon now. I mean, you end up with other mechanical problems. I mean, this thing is fairly heavy and you start rotating, it's going to start bouncing and it goes. Mechanical issues.
Horizontally or vertically? Mechanically.
Straight up, just like this.
Would it be interesting if your axis was at the center of your legs or if it was off center?
It does something different too.
Yeah.
And what happens, I don't have any of those pictures. What ends up happening, instead of having this, these people are almost joined as they go around. You end up having kind of a split, and there's blank spaces and or limbs that are separated then from everything else.
You know, depending on how far off center you have it, because the center of your lens still traces.
If your line doesn't cover that completely. And it would look, again, very interesting once it's joined together. It would do something really wild. But I've tried moving by hand. And I went with initial experiments when I was trying to do the circular stuff. And there's absolutely no way you can be slow enough and even enough going around. Going down is faster than going up, or the other way around, don't remember. It's just, it's really
that
hard.
That would be interesting to see, you know, because the more off-center it is, I mean, it just keeps changing.
Yeah. Again, in my copious spare time right now, it's just...
It would be fun to invent something.
Well, this, I do have, I still have this very large machinist table. It's about 20 pounds, so it shouldn't wiggle. I've been too busy playing with other things. But yes, it's under the works, on works, in works, in works. To attach a motor onto it and make it go around. The previous motor was way too underpowered to do anything like this. But yeah, not only go around like this, but also do more vertical scans across things outside, rather than just the studio.
Vertical scans, horizontal scans. I mean, it's your scan turns, right?
Yes. The other interesting aspect, I don't know if any of you noticed, but when the people leave their limbs behind, the feet at the fountain, yeah, there's a number of those where there's these little blobs and people have left things behind. That's when it's slightly off-center and it's moving at the same time they are.
It doesn't quite catch up to them, but it's always following their heel.
Following their feet or going the other direction, getting their head.
But if you're rotating the camera...
Oh, you're still on rotating.
You're rotating the line, right? Depending whether, again, if it's in the center...
I mean, this is should be really cool. I mean, it's a matter of having time and being able to drag the equipment someplace and where the police don't chase me off the corner.
Just get an old meat grinder.
It has to be. It really does have to be slow. I mean, you can't do it. No, 1 minute. Are you a machinist? Tell me you're a machinist.
Well, you work with stuff like that.
Yeah, I know. I need somebody to make it for me.
If you had the center of your circle at the bottom of the line, then the line kind of goes like that.
Yep.
You know, it's
more of a clock face.
Axis, you know, so it excites me.
Yeah. I mean, doing these really strange things. This is why I'm enjoying this particular aspect of photography. I mean, I shoot a lot of other things. I mean, I really love shooting the molasses stuff. I mean, some of you have seen molasses. Really cool stuff. But this is so far out of, so weird. It makes it more fun. And you know,
quite as far out as
you know, this is not Photoshop. This is this is what comes out of the camera.
Right.
I adjust for tone. Yeah, I get the blacks and the whites, at black and white. But the other strange things about these, don't know if this one's a good example. Yes, it is. Here's one. The shadows go in two different directions. Because whether they're coming this way or going back. So the shadow is lagging or leading the people. I mean, don't get that with real photography or other standard photography. Yep. Yeah?
The thing that you have on the screen, the one behind, is showing the actual screen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really helpful prop to have to help people get their mind around what they're dealing with, because it's such a wacky way of imaging the world. And And when you see the actual thing and you can move, it's like, oh, okay.
So, again, like Flatland, you're just X by time.
That's right.
And or this, I showed this off at, or showed some of these pictures off at the Maker Faire, and what someone said, a movie made one line at a time.
Yep.
So it's just kind of
but
really.
But you can say yes and no to the description. Yeah. No. But it doesn't say yes. I think the video you have helps people actually understand in a deeper way what really interesting thing is going on there with time and space.
A little bit more interactive as well. I mean, to try to pull people in. The only thing I am really worried about is that the light is going to shift so much in that gallery over a period of a day. If I have it sitting out in the hall, I can't control. You know, I can kind of guesstimate that what f4 whatever. It's going to be pretty dark. Actually, one of the other funny things, sorry, I'll digress out of my digression. In daylight, this requires an ND6. So, at F22. This sensor is really, really sensitive. And which makes for great depth of field. But it kind of stuck that way.
My feeling for the atrium space, around the gallery, so
it's got those big windows on the west side.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you, or if you put it in the other glass box, it's potentially pointing out towards the parking lot, which is also big glass space.
Right.
And it's just going to blow it all out.
That's,
I might be able to, but they're plugged in, so I can't move them too far.
Okay.
I might be able to convince Penelope I can move one inside and plug it into the ceiling? I don't know. That's going to be a question for closer. But yes, I think that's why I built it. It's much more of a visual thing to try to get people to interact. And I think kids like it.
Yeah.
My kids like it.
Going back to the idea,
that
was but if you had your slit as a radius of a circle, you know, with the thin at one end, you know, as or if you moved it to the center, then it would be the diameter of the circle, or proportionally anywhere along that line, right? So if you had a radius of a circle, you know, I mean, I'm just trying to imagine what you might come out with. You know, if you complete your 360 degrees.
Things are going to be upside down at some point.
Sorry?
Things are going to be upside down, because as it goes around,
be upside down, be right side up, it'd be sideways, it'd be everything, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, every interval between.
Which is just another way of doing these, again.
Well,
if you have people standing there, they're only going to appear here. If you have it not pointing through the center.
I think, if I'm correct, when you did those shooting from above, the person's on the turntable is on the same axis, right?
For the most part, yes.
Yeah, but again, if you move that off to the side, then you'd have something.
But if you shoot, I think you'll end up with something a lot closer to this, where you don't have an up and down. It's just, it's going to be a...
But what I'm saying is, if you're not shooting from above, you're shooting straight on.
Yeah.
Except that, you know, somehow you get it, you know, like, it's a radius instead of a diameter.
Just, have you tried anything with a tilted table, like your slit scan? Imagine that the table was actually tilted and rotating about that. Then the person who's on the table would actually, at some point, be imaged far away from the camera, and then at other points,
no,
be imaged close. So you might be able to combine a close-up and a distance.
The problem, going back to the table stuff, this one, when this one was stuck on the ceiling or whatnot, it was, and using the actual scanner mechanism, was a lot less sensitive. So I had to have these three bloody lights 150 watts beaming down at this person, and that was really uncomfortable. To have them going up closer, and even that was pretty open. You know, they were shooting F4 or something like that. To have it slanted, I'm not going to...
With the camera that you were saying, the F22...
Yeah, well, that's outside in sunshine. If I can get outside sunshine continuous, people are going to smoke. but yeah, I should be able to do better with this now. I mean, there's more things I gotta try.
So, Ralph, this is what the French really look like.
Yeah. They were pretty drunk, too. I mean, kind of.
In the south. I love the dogs.
Yes, the stretched out pooches?
The boar spit would be interesting.
there's others. I tried to chase after pigeons. They never cooperated. I mean, just there was so many, yes, filthy little. Throwing breadcrumbs and having the camera going around in a circle. They just never quite did it for me. They wouldn't quite. I think there is a picture of a pigeon in here. There was another series with this with a pigeon. Any more?
Thank you.
They can keep talking, blah, 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 blah.
Pigeon.
Cats don't move fast enough.